On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So now that the two-year state budget is signed into law, we're looking at legislation in the works, from a nonpartisan redistricting commission to electric scooter regulation. Scooters first. Have you ever used one? Would you be interested in the option? Do you think having electric scooters in addition to public transportation is a good opportunity? And then election maps coming up after that. What do you think about how Wisconsin's legislative districts are drawn? How should we approach the process in 2020? Would you like lawmakers to ensure nonpartisan redistricting? Do you think that's possible? Join in 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So it wouldn't be the State Capitol Report if we didn't talk about transportation in one form or another. So scooters representing today. Governor signed a bill regarding electric scooters. What does this bill do?
So basically what this bill does is allow local governments to regulate these electric scooters that folks might be familiar with from trips to, say, Washington, D.C. or other kind of tourist cities around the country. They're those little electric scooters you put 1 foot on or 2 feet on and zoom down the sidewalk. They do have a speed limit. I think they can only go up to 20 miles an hour. They can only weigh up to 100 pounds. So there are some specifications of what these scooters can look like from the state. But in terms of how local governments want to regulate them, that's totally up to them.
Well, let's hear what Governor Evers said about this bill.
The ability to regulate scooters locally is critical to success and public acceptance of this new transportation option going forward.
So why is regulation so critical here?
Well, I think what we're seeing in cities like Milwaukee, for example, is that there was one company called Bird Rides that had already offered some electric scooter options in the city before this type of regulation was in place. And they the city actually filed a lawsuit to have those scooters removed because they weren't authorized under state law. State law didn't exist yet. That company has expressed interest. They said they're going to be coming back now that this kind of regulatory framework is in place. We know the city of Madison has also expressed some interest in rolling out something now that there's that kind of legal backbone for how these things should work.
Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett also spoke about the scooters.
We want this to be a city where there are many modes of transportation. And this is another form of transportation that some individuals want to partake in here in the city of Milwaukee.
So in Milwaukee, how could scooters be an asset?
Well, I think it's just another way of people who are visiting the city or experiencing a certain part of the city to get around a little bit more expeditiously. I remember when we were hearing a public hearing on this bill kind of early in this legislative process, they said that most of these trips, I think, are less than a mile that these scooters are used for. Mm-hmm. So they're really kind of for these like little micro trips where you're going, perhaps just going around downtown, exploring something a little bit. If they were being used, for example, in Madison, maybe you're on the Capitol Square and going to the UW campus, something like that. But maybe you're not feeling like walking that distance, or a bike might seem like a little bit too much, either too big or, too much to handle for whatever reason. It just gives folks another option for getting more quickly from point A to point B.
I recall one of the issues with the Bird scooters was people were just kind of discarding them, like not docking them in their specific place. Mm-hmm. Is that still an issue?
I think that's a major concern of some people who pushed back on the potential for these scooters. In places like Madison and Milwaukee, you do see that in cities where they are in place. People can kind of leave them where they want to leave them. Groups of them will sort of magnetize to each other, and then you have a cluster of scooters on the sidewalk. Not the greatest for pedestrians that are trying to walk to certain locations. So I think that's something that cities are going to have to navigate and try to figure out ways around as they implement this.
Talking with Laurel White, she is WPR State Capitol reporter. We're getting a roundup of political news on this State Capitol report. What do you think about how Wisconsin's legislative districts are drawn? How should we approach the process in 2020? And would you like lawmakers to ensure nonpartisan redistricting? Is it possible? Join in at 800-642-1234. Laurel, the governor signed two bills last week, and one of them addresses step therapy and the effect on access to prescription drugs. Can you walk us through what that bill will do?
So for folks that aren't familiar, step therapy is essentially a requirement that individuals who are getting a prescription medication from their doctor try, at least attempt to take the lowest cost drug first. So they sort of step, if you will, between different prescription medications until they get to one that works for them. If the cheapest one works, that's great. But what proponents of this legislation said is sometimes patients are forced to go through these failed medicines, failed for them, until they get to something that works when their doctor knows that something a little bit further down the line is more likely to work for them. So this new law that was just signed by the governor would allow some exemptions to that process. It would allow some people to get around these steps if they feel like that's not going to work for them. It also increases transparency as to how some insurance companies develop step therapy protocols. So it just kind of shines a little bit of light on this process and offers people a little bit of a way around it to the extent that the state can.
Well, moving on to redistricting, Wisconsin's legislative districts have been called gerrymandered. Some Democratic lawmakers are attempting to try to figure that out. Here is Senator Dave Hansen on why he thinks it's important.
You know, growing up, we're all taught that voting is the cornerstone of our democracy and that every vote counts. But in states like Wisconsin, where the legislature draws the maps, that's not the case.
So tell us about what Hansen is sponsoring here. What is he proposing?
So this is a bill that Senator Hansen actually first rolled out in 2012, pretty shortly after Republicans drew the current legislative maps in 2011. What it would do is create a system in Wisconsin that's pretty similar to the system that's in Iowa right now. It's sometimes called the Iowa model for redistricting nerds out there. I'm sure they're familiar with that term, that phrase. What they do in Iowa is they have a nonpartisan commission that draws these maps. Then they go to the legislature for approval. They get three shots at the legislature to pass. So once they're drawn by the commission, they go, lawmakers can say, I kind of want some changes, throw it back.
Oh, they can make tweaks.
They can. They actually send it back to the commission. The commission makes those tweaks, goes back to the legislature three times. So that would be a very similar process in Wisconsin. That commission would be a 5-member commission, and those 5 members would be appointed by the legislative leaders in the state. The maps themselves, though, would be drawn by, I'm sure you've heard me say this a million times over the course of our interviews, the Legislative Reference Bureau.
Uh-huh.
Those folks that offer information about bills and research, they would actually draw the maps. They're the nonpartisan office that serves the legislature, overseen by this commission. The maps would go before the public in a variety of public hearings and then go to the legislature. So what Hansen is saying about this bill is that it would have, obviously a lot of parties involved, these different entities, and a lot of transparency and public input.
And if the bill doesn't make it into law, what does the process of redrawing state maps in 2020 look like?
So the census is in 2020. The maps mm-hmm. will be drawn in 2021. It is going to be interesting if this legislation isn't adopted because we will still have Democratic Governor Tony Evers in office, and he will have the power to veto the maps drawn by the Republican-controlled legislature if he doesn't believe that they're fair. So that could set us up for some delays, some challenges, some legal maneuverings, some complications that we've sometimes become familiar with in Wisconsin, things being challenged like that.
We're getting a roundup of state capitol developments, looking at legislation in progress, what's been signed, with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White. On the lottery, what are your thoughts on anonymity for Wisconsin lottery winners? Would you play more if it was guaranteed, or do you like to know who the big winners are? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a roundup of state politics. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So now that the state budget is signed into law, we're looking at bills in the works and the state's general fund outlook heading into the next budget, into 2021. What questions or thoughts do you have about Governor Evers' budget vetoes? Do you think the Wisconsin governor's veto pen is too powerful? Would you support a constitutional amendment to restrict it? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Laurel White is our guide. She is WPR State Capitol Reporter, and she stays with us. So before we move on, Laurel, it looks like we're going to circle back for just a moment to electric scooters, bringing in Larry from Sun Prairie. Hi, Larry. What are your thoughts?
Oh, hi. I haven't heard anything on Segways or mini Segways, which are just as, I think they're better than scooters. I have a mini, and I scoot in. I have a hip, kind of a hip problem, and I think of it as like more like an electric, you know, wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except
just a little
you're standing.
More modern, but sure. I don't need a wheelchair, but, you know, it gets, I don't have to walk 12 blocks to the Capitol, and I park outside because I work down there occasionally. But I don't know if this bill covers like Segways.
Great question, Larry. Thanks so much. Do we know, Laura?
Well, I think that if they meet the requirements that are outlined in the bill for the scooters, which is that 100-pound weight limit and that 20-mile-per-hour speed limit, I would assume that they're covered. I think there are some different specifications for the body of the vehicle as well. There might be something in there to do with handlebars that I would assume. I think Segways have similar handlebars to scooters.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that would definitely be something worth looking into.
Let's look at the veto amendment. Governor Evers recently signed the state's budget, and Wisconsin's governor has expansive veto powers. Republican lawmakers have proposed this constitutional amendment to address that. So what would this amendment do?
So this amendment would bar the governor from using his veto pen to increase state spending in any way, which is something that we actually saw Governor Evers do when he partially vetoed the state budget. One of his 78 partial vetoes was one that increased state school spending by about $65 million. So some Republican lawmakers were pretty concerned by that. They said that shouldn't be something the governor should be able to do, and thus introduced this constitutional amendment pretty quickly.
But didn't the lame duck session curb the powers of the governor? Would this add to that?
So this would be another way in which lawmakers are working to curb the power of the governor. Yeah, this would be taking away something that governors in Wisconsin have been able to do for quite a while. And according to a memo from the Legislative Reference Bureau that I just talked about a couple minutes ago, all recent governors in the state of Wisconsin have actually used their veto pen to increase state spending. So this isn't something that's unique to one party or the other or one governor or another.
Has the power of the veto been changed in the past in any way?
It has. So the process for changing the governor's veto power has to go through a constitutional amendment, an amendment to the state constitution. And the way that you do that is you introduce a resolution in the state legislature. It has to pass two consecutive sessions and then be approved by a statewide voter referendum. So that's happened twice in the past 30 years. One time was in 1990 when the so-called Vanna White veto was taken away. Mm-hmm. That's the ability of the governor to take out letters and words to create new words. And then in 2008, the Frankenstein veto was taken away. That is the ability to take out words in sentences to create a new sentence out of two previous sentences.
So there have been changes to the governor's ability to veto in the past. Does this ebb and flow? Is this something that we're seeing based on who is in power?
You know, I think it's just something that it's clearly brought up when a governor uses his veto pen in a way that rubs the legislature the wrong way. And it has to be pretty consistent, obviously, because that's why these requirements are in place, right? It has to pass these two consecutive sessions of the legislature, and then it has to go to a statewide referendum. So it has kind of different levels of approval that are required, which is meant to add to kind of the seriousness of it, amending the state constitution.
Well, let's talk lottery for a moment. A bill was recently proposed that, if passed, would change the practices of the Wisconsin lottery. Can you tell us about the motivation behind this bill?
So this is a bill that is sponsored. One of the sponsors is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and he said that he introduced the bill in response to a West Allis man winning the Powerball jackpot earlier this year. You might remember that. I think the jackpot was $768 million, something like that. Speaker Voss said that that individual experienced a little bit of harassment, folks wanting to get in touch with him and be involved in his life. So the speaker wanted to give folks an option, if they wanted, to remain anonymous after they accept their lottery winnings in Wisconsin, to hopefully avoid that kind of thing if they want to.
Do we know the path for this bill? What happens next?
So this is pretty early in the legislative process. It's just getting these public hearings, and then it'll get the votes in the committees and then go to the floor. We do know that it's looking pretty positive. Obviously, it has the endorsement of the speaker in the assembly, so its odds there are pretty good. And we know that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald is on board, too. So I think the only obstacle for this one, at least as of right now, would be time, just getting it to fit into the legislative schedule and make its way through the whole process before the end of this legislative session.
Let's bring in Kenneth now from Janesville. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning. Katie, you said the or asked the question, would more people play if it was not guaranteed? I mean, the lottery, is not it guaranteed now? I mean, isn't that $768 million guaranteed to be paid?
I think, Kenneth, in terms of your anonymity, if you could remain, if people wouldn't know your identity and if that was guaranteed, I think that was the purpose of that. So, but thank you so much for calling in about that. Let's take another call now. Let's go to Ray in Milwaukee. Ray, hi.
Good morning. I heard yesterday on NPR that Tony Evers just signed a bill that prevents townships or cities in the state of Wisconsin from deciding whether or not they want to have 5G. And he said, we can't stay behind. I voted for Tony Evers, and I'm just stunned that he is doing this power grab. It should be up to each township or city whether or not they want to expose their residents to what 5G may or may not do to us as far as our health goes.
Ray, thanks for the call. What do we know about broadband expansion right now in the legislature?
So basically what this bill would do is it would allow the deployment of 5G-enabled cellular antennas around Wisconsin. This is something that I think all of our Midwestern neighbors have done thus far, and that's something that the governor pointed out when he signed this legislation. He said that this was bringing Wisconsin in line with the rest of the region in terms of the technology. I do know that there have been some folks that have been concerned about the potential health effects of 5G technology. I think the antennas are closer to people, and some people have raised concerns about the effect of that on health.
Let's go to Marcus now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, good morning. So my comment is about the Powerball. Basically, I feel that it's absolutely critical to maintain transparency that the winners are divulged because I believe it's pretty similar in most other states. And if you don't want to be harassed, then don't play the Powerball, or else get an attorney once, you know, if you have a winning ticket, and you can actually hire a law firm, and the law firm can act as the
intermediary.
Yeah, correct. And then so you can stay more shielded, and then should someone harass you, you have a law firm who's right there, who's been on board the whole time to protect you and, you know, protect your rights, which, I mean, winning that kind of money, you definitely want to have some attorneys and accountants around.
Marcus, thanks so much for the call. Any thoughts there, Laurel, on that?
Well, I think that, you know, that's a big part of, obviously, transparency of these individuals that win the Powerball. The state lottery pointed out that it's helpful to them in some ways when the names are disclosed. They said that this was interesting to me and wasn't something that I had thought of before, that disclosing the names can actually prevent lottery fraud. They said in some cases in other states, knowing the name of the person who won the lottery helps them uncover insiders within the lottery system who have tipped off friends or family members or helped them in some way from the inside. So obviously knowing a name is helpful there. They also talked about just the publicity of someone winning the lottery, this big jackpot, in terms of, you know, getting more people to buy tickets.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter, and she co-hosts the WPR Politics Podcast. Coming up, you have a line to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes at 800-642-1234. We're catching up halfway through his first year in office, talking about the state budget, taking stock of other developments inside the governor's office. Stay with us. The State Capitol Report continues right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. He has had lots of windshield time crisscrossing the state, listening to constituents and discussing the state budget and what it will do. We thought it's a good time to check in now that he's 6 months into office. What questions do you have for the Lieutenant Governor halfway through his first year in office? What do you want to know? What issues do you think the state should be working to address? Have you met the Lieutenant Governor or heard him speak at an event this year? What follow-up questions do you have? We're at 800-642-1234. Mandela Barnes is the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and a former state representative from Milwaukee. Lieutenant Governor Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. It's always a great time to be here.
So you're 6 months into being Lieutenant Governor. Is the job what you thought it would be?
So it is more than I thought it would be, and I mean that in the best way possible. You know, it is a very exciting time getting to travel the state, experience some new things that I hadn't had the chance to before, and getting to meet a lot of new people with a lot of bright ideas, people who are really working to move the state forward, who aren't even involved in government, people who are involved in whether it's private industry, working in an environmental sector, whatever the case may be. It has just been a fantastic time getting to put out our message at first about the budget, and now doing some follow-up also around the budget, and just collecting more ideas from people. That's how we want to govern. We want to make sure that it's in the interest of the people, and you only do that when you have conversations.
Well, speaking of environmental, when you came into the job, you talked about focusing your attention on climate change and environmental issues like lead pipes in Milwaukee. How has that been going?
Yeah, so the first step we wanted to take in that regard was with the state budget. And in the budget was the creation of the Office on Clean Energy and Sustainability to help focus our efforts to get us to help us get towards our carbon-free goal. And also there was money for research so that we can, you know, come up with the latest innovation when it comes to clean energy research. There were other provisions to make sure that clean water was a priority. And unfortunately, those things did not make it through the Joint Finance Committee. So now, after that's all said and done, we're still working with agencies and state government to still be able to get us towards that goal. We're also going to be working with some local elected officials who signed on to some version of Paris Climate Accord to make sure that we can assist them in their efforts, because there are some cities who are already doing the hard work but could use a little bit of help from the state. So I've been taking the time to meet with local elected officials in my travels to discuss the best ways that we can make Wisconsin more green and create a sustainable state.
Let's bring in a call now. Mark joining us from Black River Falls. Hi, Mark. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I first want to thank you for being there. And the reason I'm calling is I am interested in knowing what a person can do to get a rural internet access better. Because currently the situation I'm in is where 10 megabytes per second were shown to be available, but it's not consistent, and it's not to the point where it's even worth paying for. And My question, what can a person do?
Mark, thanks.
Yes. Yeah, thanks a lot. And that was a concern that we heard over and over again, whether it was, you know, at budget listening sessions, we heard of healthcare, we heard about clean water. We also heard about rural internet access. And we want to be able to partner with, again, local government, because it's going to be different in every part of the state. And I don't think there should be one overarching way or one overarching, you know, delivery service for internet in more rural parts of the state. So that's why it's important for us to be able to provide those resources. And could it be in the form of grant funding? Yes, possibly. But there's money in the budget as well for rural broadband internet access.
We're catching up with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes halfway through his first year in office. What questions do you have for the Lieutenant Governor? What issues do you think the state should be working on? Share your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Lieutenant Governor, earlier this year, you visited a high school career fair in Milwaukee, and it was a few miles from the high school that you attended growing up. Did that event cause you to reflect on your own career path since high school and where you've come from?
Oh, always. This is actually a middle school college fair. I think that was Rufus King Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, anytime I'm in Milwaukee, anytime I get a chance to interact with children who are in the school system, it always makes me immediately think about my own past and what opportunities I thought or did not think were available to me at that age. And I don't recall really meeting any politicians. I actually remember meeting Tom Perry when he was in Congress when I was in middle school, but didn't have a chance to, you know, talk with him. He spoke to us as a group. So I think about that, and I find a certain responsibility, a certain sense of responsibility when I talk to those children. So that they know that this is possible for them as well, because there isn't always someone who's going to come here and say, hey, you can run for office one day. Or it may be said, but if that embodiment isn't there, I try to make that connection and say, I actually sat in that same desk. I walked in these same streets as you did. This is possible. You can do this. You know, if you're passionate enough about changing your community, if you're passionate enough about doing the right thing, you can be in the same position, if not even an even higher position.
And you're the state's first African-American lieutenant governor. You've been traveling so much, meeting with so many different people. Have you ever felt treated unfairly or differently because of your race?
So not necessarily in the travels. We have our issues here in Milwaukee as well. So it's less of a difference, especially when the conversation starts. Now, we do have our issues of race in Wisconsin that we have to address. Mostly systemic, all systemic. But the fact is, we deal with a lack of experience in Wisconsin, where people haven't always, had a chance to experience different cultures. You look at, some communities that are somewhat more monolithic than others. They don't always have that opportunity to interact with someone who doesn't look like them, someone who doesn't worship as they do. So that's what I feel is also important about the administration, and what I also felt was important about the campaign is that we begin to have deeper conversation, begin to have more dialogue, especially, if we are able to get media outlets and we're able to talk about information and talk about how issues impact everyone in the state, regardless if they understand it or not. I think it's a great opportunity, and I can't say that there's been a very specific instance where I felt that I was treated different in my travels because of race. Like I said, this is about that opportunity to broaden people's horizons.
Last month, you had made headlines over unpaid property taxes, and you walked away from a TV interview clearly frustrated about that question. Can you explain what you were frustrated about?
Yeah, very frustrated because I was told that we were going to be talking about Juneteenth Day. As you know, 2019 is the 400th anniversary of the unlawful arrival of enslaved Africans on the shores of Jamestown, Virginia. And, we're still facing some very significant barriers as a result of only being free for just over 150 years in America. And I talked about that in my Juneteenth Day speech. And it's a special holiday. And I felt like the day was totally disregarded by the reporter when she told us that, you know, we were going to be talking about Juneteenth Day. And this script was flipped after the statement was already made about the property taxes. Especially, you know, there was a thing where, yeah, I actually just got a letter right after the story broke about the property taxes being delinquent. So the fact is, you found out the tax was delinquent, I paid them. And the check had been sent in, and she wanted to badger me about an issue that I already made a statement about and was totally unfair, especially in a very insensitive time to do it as well. And that's the feedback I got from a lot of people, and that's a lot of folks' frustration with the media and how people are can be treated unfairly. And I just think it was very poor taste.
Do you think that the state's lieutenant governor or any appointee or lawmaker should receive a higher level of public scrutiny, regardless of, you know, when they delivered that question, than the average person or government official?
I think it depends on the issue, too. Okay. I think the fact is, you know, being late on a bill, it's not like I was years late, it was a couple months. Like, that was, and a lot of that is due because travel, not being home a whole lot. And it's not like you can avoid property taxes. If you don't pay property taxes, you're going to get your house foreclosed on it. I don't think anybody's going to, I don't think anybody wants to ever lose their house for that low of a sum of money. So it was obviously not anything that was done in malice. And if you get penalties, you just pay the penalties. Like, that's the thing about it. It was such a simple issue. Something that was actually, what I see is a non-issue. I could see if I was avoiding altogether, or I could see if I was somebody who was trying to cheat on income taxes. That would be much, much different. But this is just like somebody being late on their any sort of bill. And the fact is, there are too many people across the state of Wisconsin who can't pay their bills. And that's one reason why I decided to run for office, because we have to make this a state where everybody has a chance to get ahead. That means increases in the minimum wage. That means increasing high-paying job opportunities for folks all across Wisconsin. So a story like that is frustrating, because it's one that is you know, a simple, you overlook something simply and turn into a much bigger deal than it ever should have been.
Well, let's bring in a call now, Linda in Pewaukee. Hi, Linda. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Yes, I wanted to ask, starting in July and running through October, in northern Wisconsin, bear hunters with hounds will be running their hounds on bears, putting out millions of gallons of bait, and chasing down bears, young cubs, mothers. And in the process of this, this has already happened recently, and two bear hounds have been killed by wolves. And the hunters that take their hounds out to engage in this activity are eligible for a reimbursement of $2,500 per hound that is killed. And I would like to ask the Lieutenant Governor if he thinks that this is fair, this is reasonable. That
and Linda, we're going to get a response there on the other side of this break. We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. He stays with us on the State Capitol Report. U of a Line, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes 6 months into his time in office. He's been on the road a lot, talking with constituents at press conferences, signing ceremonies, and explaining the governor's priorities in the recently signed two-year budget. So what do you want to tell the Lieutenant Governor about the new budget? How will it impact your life? What should the Evers administration prioritize? Join in at 800-642-1234, and the Lieutenant Governor stays with us. Let's go back to Linda's question there, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, about dogs and being killed during bear hunting and the use of taxpayer dollars there. What are your thoughts?
And so I remember a few years ago when that first came up, it was a very controversial issue, and it feels like, you know, it's one of those things that should be really examined, really re-examined, in a way it feels like, you know, these dogs are being used as fodder. And, you know, you can run a along the lines of some animal cruelty issues there as well. That's something that should definitely be discussed, something that should be definitely be challenged. It doesn't, you know, just listening to it, the way she explained it, didn't sound like that is a it doesn't sound like the right way to go about things. But like any other issue where I'm not fully, I would love to talk more, if not to her, I'd encourage her to reach out to my office. We'd love to start some dialogue on that.
Linda, thanks for the call. Let's talk about the new budget. What was your role throughout this year's state budget process?
Yeah, so during the state budget briefings, when we were crafting the budget, I had a chance to sit in those meetings with the governor, with the governor's staff, with the budget team, and I was able to, you know, provide some input, especially on issues that I had been working on as a legislator, issues of some pay leave issues that we got into the budget, and some of marijuana decriminalization, which is another thing, which was a piece of legislation that I authored while I was in the assembly. That made it into the budget. I got to, you know, give my input, and it was considered as anybody else's input around the table. And that's ultimately, again, how we were able to come up with the budget that we came up with. It was about getting perspectives from different people. And it all started, again, from our budget listening tour, from our budget listening session, where we talked to people all across the state. We took their ideas. We cobbled them together, and then we framed it. We shaped it in the governor's conference room over the course of a couple months.
Well, let's bring in Jeff now, joining us from Superior. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Good morning. I have written the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and I also had a letter in our local newspaper in Superior talking about funding Hudson State Park. We had a storm 2 years ago, and repairs have still not been made to the state park. Minnesota suffered the same fate of the same storm, and they've already repaired Jay Cook State Park. And Patterson's Park seems to be neglected. I documented my observations there earlier in the spring. And I'm wondering how you feel about funding the state parks, and is the budget for the Patterson State Park, is that public information?
Jeff, thanks for the call. What can you tell us, Lieutenant Governor, about state park funding?
Our state park system is a gem in this state, and thank you for bringing that up, because if we aren't protecting our state parks, if we aren't repairing the damage to our state parks, then we lose out on a lot of tourism. We lose out on opportunities for our children to recreate. We lose a lot of opportunity for our adults to do the same. So I want to thank you for bringing that up, because our state parks should not lie in ruin, because they are the envy of so many other places around this country. And the budget is public information. If you reach out to my office, ltgov@wisconsin.gov, we can get you the information about how to access what the budget for that park is.
Let's bring in Joan now, joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Three things that I'd like to mention, and thank you, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, for all that you do. I'm really grateful that Governor Evers has funded more money for K-12 and for the university system. Education is the future of our state and the citizens of our state. The third thing that I wanted to mention was the funding of the maintenance of our highways. Without funding our highways, without maintaining our highways, tourism has no future in this state. For 8 years, Scott Walker refused to fund highways, or he couldn't figure out how to do so. So I'm really happy that we're moving in the direction of that funding. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks. And did you see, Lieutenant Governor, a compromise on transportation, because the governor had wanted a different direction?
Mm-hmm. The governor wanted a more sustainable direction for highway funding. And like we said, at the budget address, this is a down payment on our priorities. We obviously, it's not about us not getting all that we wanted. It's about the people not getting what all they called for. So that's the unfortunate place that we're in. However, there is forward movement, whereas for the last 8 years, all you saw was kicking the can down the road. You saw a lot of infighting that led to funding of our roads being stalled. So we're in a better place. We're not in the best place. And also, in addition to road funding, we need to make sure that we're looking at other transit options, we are working to expand mass transportation. Regional transportation should be a part of the conversation, making sure that, you know, communities have more accessibility for bike lanes, for walking paths. This is the moment where we should be exploring all options, and we should be thinking much more broadly. And so I want to thank her for her call, and I'm happy that we are beginning to move in the right direction. Won't be satisfied until we actually get there.
The budget approved by Republicans would have placed spending limits on your state patrol security detail, which has been costing more than under your predecessor. Governor Evers vetoed that item from the budget. Did you support his veto?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you look at the cost for security. I've been around the state a little bit more. There's been more work being done. And, you know, I feel singled out. That was the thing. I felt very singled out. I felt like it was a very direct political attack from Republicans in the Finance Committee who are frustrated that we are getting across the state, spreading our message, and calling out their files. And to the extent that we can get as many places as we need to be to not just call out their files, but to talk about a positive plan to move the state forward, I guess it doesn't sit well with some of them. And if they can limit attempt to limit the ability of you getting across the state to spread that message, this was that was their way of attempting to do so.
So, with the state budget completed, what are the administration's top legislative or policy priorities now? What are you working on inside the governor's office now the state budget is completed?
Yeah, we now have to develop a legislative strategy around health care, around criminal justice reform, and continuing still on the issue of sustainability, of environmental stewardship and clean energy technology development. That's where our priority issues will be, because this is how we work to create jobs in the state. It'll be essentially the same priorities as the state budget, just a different strategy, just a different direction, a different route to get us to where we need to be.
Do you see room for Democrats and Republicans to work together on legislation or shaping these policies?
I definitely think there's room. Again, if you look back 2 years ago, the state budget was still being delivered. And that's when Republicans had total control of every branch. And now that we have shared government, the budget was delivered and signed on time. And I think that for at least the next year and a half, the opportunities to work together, to come together, to solve our problems are there. And we've shown our willingness to make sure that happens. It is up to legislative Republicans to not be engage in the same old political games that have been going on for a lot of this time since we've been in office. People are calling for change. People are calling for us to do the right thing, to do right by communities, to do right by this state. We owe it to them. We're ready to get to work, and the Republicans are also ready to get to work.
Well, Lieutenant Governor, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Mandela Barnes is the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and a former state representative from Milwaukee. Just ahead, we're hearing about a song that honors Wisconsin and was based on three unpublished verses by Bob Dylan. The video for the song was released last week. It went viral, and it features dozens of Wisconsin leaders. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.